Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 12th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, I don't even think I need to ask how things are going, because as we record this, England has just punched their ticket to the Euro Cup Soccer Championship final against Italy. But of course, when people hear this episode, the final will already be having been played the night before. So are you willing to make a prediction?
Well, I've got to correct you on your English there, Graham. It's football, not soccer.
Sorry.
And absolutely, England, three or four goals, maybe a hat-trick from Sterling. I think it's time for his hat-trick. But yeah, no, we're absolutely thrilled in England to have made it to the final. And as you say, we're recording this before we know the outcome. But yeah, football's coming home for sure.
Yeah, you must be thrilled. So before we get into everything that we got to cover this week, I want to remind everyone that the Carnegie Mellon University Tepper School of Business is a sponsor for this podcast, and we greatly appreciate that. So let's hear a little bit about Tepper, and then we'll move on. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program, according to U.S. News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. All right, so Alex, what's been going on? Have you been keeping an eye on LiveWire? I feel like I saw some Harvard 2+2 acceptances on the site, but what else has been going on in the world of kind of admissions and late round decisions and things?
That's it. Basically, Harvard released their decisions for their early admissions program. Absolutely fantastic. So thrilled for those folks that now have an offer at Harvard and you know, have a great opportunity going forward. But yeah, the rest of LiveWire has been dull as dishwater, quite frankly. It's a very quiet time for us right now. So yeah, not a lot of other reports. Didn't really see much movement on the waitlist this last week, quite honestly.
No, and the only thing I'll say is I was talking to Blair Mannix, Director of Admissions at Wharton, for a podcast, actually, that I recorded that'll hopefully air in the very near future. But basically, she was telling me how, you know, things on her mind are visas, vaccines, and kind of, you know, this volatility that's been introduced by the Delta variant in terms of international students coming and stuff. So there's still, you know, some parts of the world now that are getting kind of reconfined because of this Delta. So there's some uncertainty out there, but yeah, I think most schools have kind of buttoned up their class and they're hoping that everything's all set. And I feel like everyone's going to be in person for learning in the fall, but yeah.
Don't tell me she came up with an acronym, the 3 V's.
She did not. I actually just I just realized as I wrote down visas, vaccines.
And volatility. Yes. Very interesting. I do agree with the sentiment. I mean, we're still in very uncertain times, and
yeah,
it's got to be difficult for those folks to manage their incoming class. But I think hopefully we're in a better situation than we were this time last year.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, fingers crossed, everybody.
And I would say over on the website, we continue to publish essay topic analyses. So if you're beginning to work on your essays for your upcoming applications, read our analysis of each school's questions. They'll help kind of guide you as you write. We also continue to publish the recommendation letters and the questions that schools ask for those letters so that people can get a handle on what their recommenders are going to be tasked with as they travel through the admissions process. Our Real Numbers of MBA admissions series is continuing to roll out. I think I saw we just ran average GRE scores across top U.S. programs. Of course, not every top U.S. program reveals what the average GRE score is, so it's not quite as robust of a list as like the GMAT list, because not every school's reporting yet on that. But we try to cover the ones that are there. And again, stay tuned for more of those Real Numbers pieces. We're going to be publishing all kinds of cool facts and figures across top 50 U.S. programs and top European programs too.
I'm going to quiz you, Graham.
Uh-oh.
What's the average GRE score for one of the very top programs?
Ooh, I think I read, I was just looking at the article, and I think HBS has a 326 average. I feel like that's what I saw. I don't have that article in front of me right now, so I'm really on the spot. But it's definitely, you know, mid-320s and up for the very top schools. And I would say, in the similar vein where you have kind of like, oh, you want to get above 700 on the GMAT, I feel like that 320 threshold is sort of in that ballpark too. I don't know if you would agree, but I'm sort of newer on GRE kind of understanding the score, but that's been my impression.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense to me. Yeah, 327 yep. sounds like an average for a very top school.
Yeah.
And yeah, 320 is your cutoff. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. So the other thing is on the podcast, Alex, I've been recording these solo efforts with, admissions directors. And so we have, I've already recorded an episode with the admissions director at Columbia Business School and over at Wharton. So they're going to be coming out. I've got to work with our producer to figure out when we're going to roll them out, but they're going to come very soon. And I have some other really exciting ones scheduled. Stay tuned, everyone, for those, because I know that they're fun. We ask, admissions directors all kinds of fun questions about their process. So stay tuned for that. The other big thing, Alex, is that this Wednesday is our first Essay Insight workshop of the season, July 14th, noon Eastern. I will be emceeing a roundtable discussion with admissions directors from Wharton, Chicago Booth, MIT Sloan, Yale, and Berkeley. Talk about an all-star lineup. You can sign up at bit.ly/clearadmit-essay-insight. That's all one word, all lowercase.
How many folks you got signed up for that now, Graham?
It's ridiculous. It's hundreds and hundreds of people that are signed up.
Awesome.
So it should be fun. Yeah. And the schools are really excited, and we'll do the same thing, the two subsequent Wednesdays as well. So on the 21st and the 28th with, Duke, UT Austin, Tuck, Cornell, Ross, LBS, INSEAD, UCLA, UNC, and Tepper. So you can sign up for all of them, on our website. Should be a lot of fun.
Are you paying for a Zoom license now?
We have to be.
Or are we going to do it off of the free version?
No, we are no longer. I don't deal with that part of it, but I know that we have like the really robust version of Zoom
Good.
Now. We need it, yeah. And then Clubhouse every Thursday at noon, as usual, noon Eastern. Again, been enjoying our time on Clubhouse talking with candidates. Less one way than a podcast, so a lot of fun.
Yeah, could say we had a great session last week, but since it's happening in two hours' time, I don't know what the session is going to be like.
No idea.
But maybe we'll talk about football.
Yeah, we shall see. And then we got a review for the podcast. So someone listening heard my plea last week. I was sad because we hadn't had a review in a while. So we got a 5-star review that is titled Best Venue for MBA News and Advice. And this person wrote, if you're applying to an MBA program, you should be listening to Clear Admit. Through Alex and Graham, I learned best practices, which helped me craft my own narrative. I'll be attending an M7 school in the fall, and I clearly benefited from this program. A heartfelt thank you, and please keep up the good work. And that's from Sam, who is listening on Apple Podcasts. So really appreciate that. Nice to hear that.
Let's hope they have a great time. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. As always, you can email Alex and I by just sending a note to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps. Send us your questions, your fears, hopes, dreams, whatever. We'll write you back. And if you want, we'll even talk about you on the show. So send us a note if you feel so moved. Alex, I think we're ready to get into the three candidates that you picked out to review on this week's episode, unless you had anything else you wanted to discuss.
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is a candidate targeting fall 22. They're applying to 6 schools, and the schools are Columbia, Harvard, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago Booth, and Wharton. So that's basically the M7, right? Without MIT, I think, right? So very good list. They are a military officer. And they'd love to get into consulting and then maybe nonprofit in the longer term. In the short run, they've got Bain, BCG, and McKinsey on the target list. GMAT score is 750, GPA 2.5, and years of work experience, they've had 5 years in the military to date. They do have a master's degree in computational data analytics. That's they earned that degree at Georgia Tech, and they have a 3.7 in that degree, which is a stark contrast to their 2.5 undergrad, which came from West Point. This candidate is an African American and is of African American and Native American descent, and they're wondering about their GPA. And so, Alex, I'll kind of stop there, but what do you make of this candidate? And yeah, what would you tell them in terms of how to frame that GPA, which is quite low, right?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you right back. What's the lowest the top programs will go?
Oof. I mean, I think there's no limit in the sense that if it's really an amazing candidate from a, you know, like with unique experience or, you know, that they're looking for, I think they'll be really flexible. I guess I don't think I've ever seen anyone with like a sub 2.0 get into a top business school. But maybe it's possible. I mean, maybe there, you know, people make exceptions to everything. I think I did once see someone get into business school without having completed undergrad. It was like a really exceptional case, but yeah, I think 2.5 though is low. I mean, especially if you're talking about Harvard and Stanford and stuff. It's a good question though. What about you? I mean, you were on the other side reading files. What was the lowest GPA you remember given the green light to?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're at that very low end.
Yeah.
And I hate to be doom and gloom, but quite frankly, everything else about this candidate has to be fairly outstanding, I think. He says, since then, I've held multiple command positions. So this is in the military. In special forces units, sounds very impressive to me just there, deployed and maintained a high GPA in my graduate program. So Graham, these folks in the special forces units with sort of command positions, they've, to me, is that the elite of the elite? That's pretty highbrow, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And I'm not an expert on like, you know, military hierarchy, but yeah, I mean, I think if you're commanding a special forces, you know, unit like and deploying, that's big time stuff. That's leadership, right?
So to me, the military experience is a big check in the positive column.
Totally.
And then you've got a 750 on the GMAT. Well, I'm sorry, I've had a terrible time picking candidates lately. They're all in the high 700s. But you know, to get a 750 on the GMAT, you've got to be wicked smart. They got a 3.7 GPA in computational data analytics. So not only is a 3.7 GPA at a master's level, I mean, I know there's a little bit more grade inflation on the master's level generally, but computational analytics, data analytics, sounds to me like this person has to be smart. There's clearly underlying issues related to this 2.5 GPA that they might need to explain and provide a bit of context. But I've got to think that this candidate has done enough since that undergraduate experience to say, one, I'm wicked smart, and two, I'm motivated to do very well. And those are the two broad areas that you really need to check off if there's any question in your academic profile.
Yeah.
I really do like this candidate. I know that we had a bit of a conversation before we came on air and we had some discussion about the candidate's goals, but I do think maybe their personal experience early in their life, their experience working with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I mean, I really do get this notion of having the goal in the nonprofit sector, bringing much better analytical rigor to the nonprofit sector in terms of decision making and whatever it is in the long run, and taking a detour through consulting in the short run, which is very standard for military personnel. To me, there's a lot to like here, Graham.
Yeah, I guess I also was thinking about how West Point's kind of famous for having, there isn't a lot of grade inflation there. So it's not, that doesn't excuse a 2.5, but it's not like everyone from West Point has a 4.0 either. So that I thought was noteworthy. I also think, you know, like you said, you know, they hit the ball out of the park on their master's degree and the GMAT. So they can make the case. Now, I don't know if, you know, the likes of Harvard, Stanford, or even Wharton, you know, maybe they can be, they have such an amazing applicant pool that they can be super picky and say, yeah, we get that this person's great, but we have other people with similar, you know, profiles who do have the GPA we want. So it could, they could run into a little bit of that, but that's why they're applying to not just those three. So I think as long as they cast that net across the M7, I mean, would you think that they need a non-M7 school on the list? Like, are you worried that they should have a...
Not in round one. Okay. Not in round one.
Yeah, that's
fair. Maybe in round two. Mm-hmm. This is not an overrepresented candidate. In fact...
Right, they're underrepresented.
The opposite. Yeah. They're underrepresented. They're actually African-American, Native American descent. So check that box. Not that that in of itself has any impact, but how that's influenced this person's life and career and so on and so forth and whatever, that can absolutely add value. Diversity is super, super important. I was reading a story today, actually, on... I sent it to you, actually.
I read it.
But it's basically really makes this strong case of why diversity is super important. And sort of in the context of why England is doing so well as a footballing nation, which we should be doing because we are the best footballing... No, I shouldn't go down that rabbit hole. But anyway, the point is, to me... Round one, they should be aiming high. That's very good. Not sure why Sloan's not in the mix. You made that mention, and they're looking at this sort of analytics side, so maybe they need to think about Sloan too. But if for whatever reason this 2-5 does rear its ugly head, they'll have ample opportunity in round two to adjust if they need to. I really don't think they'll need to. Fingers crossed. It sounds like a super, super cool guy.
Yeah, agreed. And I just want to thank, I think the handle they used on the website was Army Data Guy. So I want to thank Army Data Guy for sharing the profile. And again, I think, I know we, you know, we try to just sort of tell it like it is. I think this is a, it's a wild card a little bit with the 2-5, but I think they're definitely barking up the right tree. Like I would go after the top schools, include an optional essay explaining, you know, the circumstances of undergrad and, you know, the effort that was put in on the masters and GMAT to kind of help compensate. And they should be okay. I mean, we'll see. I think, again, apply to this group of schools and hopefully they hit it. You just got to hit it one, right? So we shall see.
I think there's clear evidence of a transformation here.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
So that's got to be very good.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that post. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry that we received, and the candidate wants to start in the fall of 22. They have four schools on the target list, and they are Cambridge, LBS, Oxford, and Toronto. That's the Rotman School. And they've been working, in a, what did they say, a boutique investment banking firm, like really small, in India. And they would love to get into kind of bulge bracket investment banking, ideally with a focus on renewable energy, I believe. They indicate wanting to work for maybe Bank of America, Barclays, Citibank, Deutsche Bank, Goldman, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, you know, all the usual suspects. GPA is a 63%, and that's out of, that's an Indian GPA, not as bad as it sounds. And they had a 760 on the GMAT. 6 years of work experience. They would love to land in the UK after they finish business school. And they mentioned they already have CFA level three, that their undergrad was from a top tier university in India. And remember, we don't see too many people, you know, sometimes you see people in the 70s or so, maybe 80 at best. So that's, in terms of the scale and the GPA, a 63% isn't all doom and gloom. But Alex, what do you make of this candidate? Because they, it sounds like they want to go end up in the UK, and so they have three UK schools and one Canadian school on their target list, but they want to work in banking. So, yeah, what do you make of this sort of profile and maybe even the school selection?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? They're working in investment banking, actually in the front office investment banking, which they made quite clear, even in India. I do love the term boutique. Whatever you apply it to, it just means you work in a small firm. Let's not beat around the bush.
Better.
I mean, I know EB is a common acronym, sort of whatever. Anyway, you get the, let's call it boutique, but, you know, I work for a boutique consulting firm. It's called Clear Admit. There's only a few of us that do it. but anyway, it's... you know, 760 GMAT, clearly they're very smart. They've done well at work. It sounds like they've done very well at work in terms of investment banking. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to use the MBA to upgrade, i.e. go to a bulge bracket instead of a small investment bank. And they're trying to sort of use the MBA to allow them to maybe move out of India and into the UK market and so on and so forth. So it looks to me like they've done well. They've done some CFA stuff. So they're clearly passionate and interested in doing what they've done. They threw out some numbers that suggest that they've done well. So that's all good. I'm not completely enamored by their outside of work activities and so forth. It seems to me in the explanations that they put in that they're trying to force the fact that they do some other stuff, but they don't really do a lot of other stuff. Which is fine. They clearly, if you work in investment banking, you are committed to working long, hard hours. You know, if there's one industry that comes to mind when you think about grueling workload, it's typically going to be investment banking. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a lot of stuff that you're doing outside of work, don't try to sort of thread the needle of, you know, a few bits here and there when it's really not particularly substantial. Maybe that's not the case here, but I wanted to throw that out there. The bigger conversation here, Graham, is if they want to be in London, what is their best option? So they put Cambridge, London Business School, Oxford on there. Clearly, they're great options. What if they're going to target the next level down in the UK market? Or should they also be thinking about maybe top 16 programs, top 20, 16, 20 programs in the US to sort of add to their range of schools that they're targeting? Rotman seems to be a bit of an outlier since it's in Toronto, not in London.
Yeah, my thought was that Rotman is there because maybe they would have a fallback of working in finance in Toronto or something, for which Rotman's great. Yeah. I mean, it's a really good finance school, and Toronto is a bit of a finance hub for Canada, right? So, but as to the other UK options, I mean, the schools that came to mind for me were Manchester, which is probably the next big name in the UK. And then you've got Warwick, which you've helped me learn how to pronounce.
Yeah, it's like football and soccer, Warwick and Warwick.
Yeah. And then the other one's Imperial. Their MBA program's decent as well. So, you know, you could say, look, if you want to be in the UK, focus there. But then you and I were talking before we kind of came on air about, look, this person has a solid GMAT score. They've made really, I think, impressive strides at work, doing interesting stuff, and, you know, decent undergraduate experience. And so my thought was, should they look at some of the big finance or banking feeder schools in the US too? You know, I mean, could you go to Stern with the goal of still ending up in the UK doing banking? And I you know, and would that be better than going to Imperial or something? I don't know. I was kind of wondering about that.
Yeah, and I guess it would behoove the candidate to look at the alumni networks in London and see how the US schools are represented there, if that makes sense for them.
Yeah.
Or if maybe they get deviated and have an interest in being in New York, if that's ultimately the option that's open to them. A couple of other things I just wanted to bring up. One, even they recognize that their undergraduate record's not outstanding. It's an average GPA in this context.
Right.
But I did want to make sure that that was part of the conversation. That 760 GMAT, however, is not average. That's ridiculously high, as we know. So kudos to them for that. I would say first round applications will also be important in this candidate's case versus the previous candidate we just talked about, where, to be honest, first or second round would be perfectly fine. But for this candidate, you're of Indian origin, you're working in finance, I presume male, but I'm sorry if I got that wrong. But the point is probably overrepresented.
Yeah. So I think early application, they also were saying that, you know, they weren't sure about other schools in the UK. I think, you know, if they really want to land in the UK, I would certainly take a very good look at Manchester. I mean, their MBA program was actually founded in parallel to LBS's. It was actually a state mandated thing, right? Where those two were the first business schools in the UK. So I would look at Manchester. I don't know that they did ask about, oh, should I look at a specialized master's in finance? I think that, you know, those are pretty good for early career folks, but I'm less sold on them as a late career or mid, you know, kind of mid-career choice. And I think you pointed out in the comments that it's kind of a narrower thing. And so ideally they would just get an MBA and you know, do a lot of finance coursework and get into banking.
Would the master's program get them a job in London?
Hard to say, because I think one of the problems they might face is there are a lot of internationals, and so there might be a lot of competition.
Right.
You might know this, but they indicate that they have permanent residency in New Zealand, because I guess they lived there for a while. Mm. That doesn't help them at all in the UK, does it, even though it's Commonwealth?
If they were a citizen, it might well do. I don't know if being a permanent resident would.
Yeah. I don't think it does. Yeah. So in any event, yeah, this is an interesting one. But if I were this person, I would apply early. I would put together a great set of application materials. I would focus on, you know, Cambridge, Oxford, LBS. I might throw in a flyer on a Stern or even a Chicago booth and, you know, look at Manchester. I would get stuff in early and see where the chips fall. I think, you know, you made a good point about their extracurriculars. The one thing I will say is, you know, when they were in undergrad, they were organizing a lot of these large trips and, you know, that's more social, yeah. But it does show. I mean, they mentioned they were organizing these like travel trips for groups that are like 100 people. So that's kind of an interesting, you know, management task.
Yeah. And I might have misspoke there a little bit, because basically, if you see someone that's really active in their undergraduate and then is working in investment banking and working incredibly ridiculous hours, at least they've shown that pattern of behavior of wanting to be involved and wanting to lead and doing stuff,
right,
which can then re-emerge in the MBA. So you're absolutely right there. I mean, there are definitely some candidates that are able to make the case that they can't wait to get involved in business school, even though they haven't done a lot lately, because they're working ridiculous hours.
Yeah, and you can come back to this and say that, you know, if you're asked in an interview, for example, you could say, you know, look, in undergrad, I did A, B, and C. Obviously, in my current job, it's been pretty grueling, but I'm really excited about getting back to business school. And here's what I would like to do as a student in terms of extracurricular involvement. And so they just need to think that through. It's funny, the first extracurricular activity that they listed in terms of like, or one of the first in terms of current things they're doing was avid stock market investor since 2017. I don't think
I'm not sure that flies.
No, because it's mostly, even though, I mean, I think a lot of people like to invest in the stock market. It just, you know, you do it for your own financial gain.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit, fraught with peril. So yeah, I would stick to the more, you know, doing stuff with other people kind of thing. But again, I like this candidacy. And I think the thing that struck me was I was like, wow, given these numbers and their background, are they aiming high enough? And should they throw in a US school or two at the top end? But yeah, I think everything's, you know, I feel good about their chances at minimum at the schools they have on their list if they apply early. So,
but you say, should they throw in, are they aiming high enough? Should they throw in other top US programs or whatever, they want to work in London, LBS
absolutely
is your top choice.
Agree totally. So I think I was just sort of more thinking through as they go down that list, you know, does it then get
no for sure. Yeah
fair enough. So thanks to that person for sharing their profile. Best of luck. Keep us posted if you can. We love to hear like what happens to folks. We then see their live wire entries and ideally at the end a decision wire entry when they get into schools. So keep posting to the site. Alex, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a third apply wire entry targeting fall 22 and applying to Duke, Georgetown, Michigan, UCLA, UNC, and UVA. This person's been working in construction as kind of like real estate development planner, and post-MBA, they list other as their goal, and we can talk a little bit about that in our discussion. It's sort of still related. They may return to their current employer, basically. In the GMAT, they scored a 760. Their GPA was a 3.2 out of Tokyo University and its graduate school, which is Japan's top school. They majored in city planning, and they've been working for a top construction company doing kind of real estate development planning. They've got 9 years of work experience. They're located in Tokyo, and they either want to land in the Bay Area, which I think is their sort of short-term post-MBA goal, and then ultimately back in Tokyo. So, Alex, What do you make of this? Because I will say they, in the comments, they mentioned that they took the GMAT and they were surprised by their score, and they're thinking maybe they should like come up with a different set of target schools because of that.
Yeah.
But they also point out that they really like non-urban, small, close-knit, collaborative MBA programs. So, yeah, what do you say about this candidate?
Yeah, as we discussed in one of these new features that we're developing for our subscribers, you know, this whole idea of selecting a close-knit, sort of friendly community, that's a secondary sort of factor in terms of deciding the schools that you apply.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about primary factors, and that's, you know, is this person targeting the right level of program for a start,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. And clearly they have acknowledged in their comments that, you know, they've came up with this set of schools, which are very good schools. Basically, they're targeting top 16, top 20 programs with this list. Then they took the GMAT, got 760, and said, well, gosh, maybe I can aim a little bit higher. And gosh, maybe they can, right? So even though these are good schools, and, you know, if they get into sort of Ross or Anderson or Duke or whatever, Darden, they should be very happy. It might be worth aiming a little bit higher. So again, maybe one or two more top 16, one or two M7s in there. Now, So I agree with them, and they're getting sponsored by their company, so they've got an opportunity coming out of business school. So there's less pressure on the school from a recruiting standpoint. That's very good. They've got options maybe of going to California with their firm's office there, and so forth. So that part of it looks very good too. One thing that I want to focus on here, Graham, is they've got 9 years of experience, and they're from Tokyo, Japan. And I hate to sort of stereotype, but again, back in my ADCOM days, which is several years ago, so things may well have changed, but you would almost have this sense that these folks that have an offer in hand with their company and are getting sponsored, they're coming from places like Japan. They've had, you know, several years of experience. They're going to come to our program, but they're not going to fully engage. They're just punching their ticket to then go back to their company, and so on and so forth. So my advice to this candidate would be, make sure you don't hit that stereotype. You want to come across as someone that's really excited to fully embrace the MBA experience, just like anyone else with 9 years, whatever experience. You've got to show that fit that you will fully engage and be a very sort of present class member, and so on and so forth. I think if they can do that, there's a lot to like here, Graham.
Yeah, it's funny. So you make a really good point about they're a bit older, and so they've got to show that they want to throw themselves in, you know, headlong to the MBA experience. And you mentioned like, oh, they have a job back at their old company, and so maybe they won't be as engaged as a result. And I was actually thinking that, you know, there's another side to that too, which is that they have a job at their company, and so they're sponsored, which I think, you know, can be quite appealing when you're an admissions reader, because it's sort of like one less candidate that the career office has to find a job for. So there is like a little bit of that going on. I would argue also that coming from Japan, you know, major asset, there aren't as many candidates applying from Japan. I made a list of schools that I thought they should apply to, just kind of thinking through some of their needs, which arguably are like secondary needs, but also the primary needs of like where they want to work short term and so on. And so I came up with Stanford, Haas, Tuck, Duke, Darden. And then I put for the last one on the list, I had like, oh, what about Wharton or HBS, even though both are urban and big. I just thought, you know, this is the kind of candidate, sponsored, high GMAT score from a coveted market, with really interesting work experience. Like, I actually think having someone who's done sort of like city planning, real estate development, that's always interesting to have in the classroom. So in any event, long story short, I really like this candidate, but I agree they're gonna need to execute on the applications. And I also agree they need to shift their list around a little bit and maybe aim just a bit higher, because they could probably end up, I mean, if they wanna be in the Bay Area when they're done, I mean, why not apply to Stanford? And I think they already had Haas on the list, but yeah. So I don't know if you agree with that or what you make of it.
I agree. I mean, obviously, you're saying aim very high and, you know, basically prepare yourself to not be successful at a couple of these programs. But a great application strategy is apply to schools, some of which are not successful because you know you've aimed high enough.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So, yeah, I do think Stanford would be a very tricky proposition, but you won't know unless you apply, right? And maybe there is something about this work experience, and you're exactly right. The type of work experience does actually sound fascinating.
Yeah.
That could really resonate. And maybe when they look at that first essay of Stanford's, which you know I love, they come up with a really interesting sort of backstory and so on and so forth that's not revealed here on ApplyWire. So
yeah,
absolutely. I think we both agree they need to aim higher, but I do want them to make sure that they come across as someone that's going to fully engage and be excited about the two-year opportunity and not just someone that's punching their ticket. If they do that, they will get into a better school.
Yeah, I agree. And I have to say, from what I read, I bet that they are going to be engaged because they seem, you know, they're like seeking out a really close-knit, collaborative type of MBA experience. So I assume that's, you know, part of it. But yeah, I really like this candidacy. And
I'm talking to the three other listeners that we have.
Yeah. So, but no, very interesting candidacy. And I think, you know, it's funny, city planning, development, these are things that you're reading more and more about because of the, you know, environmental impact that we've, you know, kind of climate change as well as COVID. And what does it mean? Like, how are we living in large cities with lots of people? And I've seen lots of articles flying by on LinkedIn of late about city planning efforts being undertaken in Paris and Singapore and Cleveland, like very innovative new ideas for how to green cities and things. So I feel like they could have a lot to say in their application. We shall see, but I wish them the best of luck and want to thank them for sharing their profile. They mentioned that we should be wary of any typos because they're in Japan and I guess they're native Japanese speaker, but I thought their post was perfect. Yeah. Like there wasn't any. So it seems like they're off to a good start in that category.
Yeah.
So Alex, thanks for picking these out as usual. I know we had a whole bunch of people with really high test scores, but there were people with, you know, issues to tackle in terms of school selection or, you know, there was the really low GPA of our first candidate. So there's always something to discuss. And I appreciate all the work that goes into you finding these. And I know we have a whole bunch that have come in. So we'll have a bunch for next week, too.
Very good. Yep. No, excellent. And stay safe, everyone. Best of luck.
All right. Thanks, Alex. We'll see you in 1 week's time.